It's now time for the Fantasy 411 podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Fantasy 411. I'm Matthew Leach, talking fantasy baseball with MLB.com's lead fantasy writer, Fred Zinke. And Fred, we had some somewhat anticipated news that we got confirmation of last night. Yoan Moncada is getting called up by the Red Sox, and the sounds of it, he is going to at least get some time at third base. I am simultaneously sky-high on Moncada in the long term. His combination of skills is amazing, and a little skeptical in the short term for a couple of reasons, and one of them is just opportunity. I'm not all that convinced that he's going to play that much. I think he'll play some, and he, you know, one of the things he has done is steal bases, and so he could get you a few steals. But the other thing is that he still has a pretty good amount of swing and miss in his game. Now, he walks a lot, so I think in the long run, he's going to be fine. Again, to be clear, I am super high on this guy, but I'm not sure how much of a mixed league asset he is at this point. How much do you like Moncada just over these 5 weeks?
I'm going to say I'm a little more optimistic than the impression you gave. I agree with you, like, long-term, I think we both see him the same way. My feeling is that Travis Shaw and Aaron Hill have been so bad since the All-Star break. I don't know if they'll completely walk away from Shaw, but if Moncada gets off to a hot start, then I think they could. Because, I mean, they're, I don't say desperate to win the American League East, but pretty much. Like, they're a couple games behind Toronto. It's going to be really close. They can use every win they can get. You know, I think the first, say, 5 or 6 games Moncada plays may decide his role. If he comes in and gets, you know, 2 hits a game in those first 5 games, I think it would be hard for John Farrell to go back to Shaw at all if Moncada's really producing. If he comes in those first 5 games and hits 250, which is fine, then I think he gets into a timeshare at third base, and then he's not a mixed league asset. So, like, I would pick him up and then just see how those first few games go, especially because there's some team in every league that needs steals.
Right. Do you think, because I think that's the one thing that we're confident of. If he plays at all, he's going to steal bases, because the thing that stands out to me about him is that not only does he have 94 steals in 187 professional games, he has 94 steals in 109 tries. Some of these kids are not really refined base stealers. They're just fast. He seems to have some skill beyond speed at stealing bases, so I think that'll be there. Do you think he's going to hit for any power, again, in the short term? 15 home runs between high A and double A this year. It's kind of coming together. Again, long term, I think there's reason to think he's going to hit some home runs, but do you think he's going to show any power now, or do you think it's really mostly about the steals and maybe runs and RBI in that lineup?
Yeah, I think it's mostly steals and runs. You know, if he hits 2 home runs in September, I would be happy. You know, I think, like you said, he's not totally without power, so he could drive in some runs. Like, we're not talking about a Billy Hamilton here. So that's good. And that's just a really productive lineup. And I don't think he'll crack the top 4 or 5. So if he's hitting 7th, 8th, maybe even 9th in the lineup, like, there should be some guys on base at times for him to drive in a few runs. But I think it's mostly for the steals and the runs. And he is someone, and we saw this with Hamilton a couple years ago, he's someone who in September may not start a game, but may provide fantasy production by coming in late in the game, stealing a base, and scoring a run.
Sure. And speaking of prospects and the American League East, Gary Sanchez continues to rake. He's not this good, obviously. Nobody's this good. But when we start looking ahead to next year, where do you think you might have him ranked among catchers when we start drafting for 2017?
I mean, obviously September will be more important for Sanchez than it is for most other players in baseball. I mean, if he hits even 6 home runs in September, that would really boost his stock for 2017, whereas if he, you know, hits 245 with 3 home runs in September, then we would say, okay, well, August was just, you know, an initial hot streak. I think right now, you know, to me, Posey's still the clear number one for a full-season league. If someone wanted to say they wanted Sanchez in September just because he's hot right now, that would be fine, but... And then I don't think yet he's past Jonathan Lucroy, maybe not Wilson Ramos, but I feel like he's threatening there. Like, that would be the difference for me between him hitting 6 or 7 home runs in September, which is something Lucroy doesn't do, or him, you know, hitting 245 with 3 homers. Then I think he falls back to, like, fifth or sixth among catchers, where he's got a lot of potential, but then he hasn't totally proven it yet.
But, I think that might be the most revealing thing of all, right? That there's this massive catcher middle class, or a whole bunch of catchers who are worth having. Guys you who have some value, who you'd be willing to start, but who clearly aren't in that Posey or Lucroy class. I don't know where Wilson Ramos is going to fall in that range when we start talking about next year. I still don't know what to make of this year entirely. But I think maybe the most telling thing about what you just said is that even if this guy tails off, you still like him near the front of that class. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think so, because I feel like, especially in one-catcher leagues, once you get past the top tier and you start comparing him to Matt Wieters and Stephen Vogt and Russell Martin, and like these are all guys who have had nice stretches. None of them have probably ever done what Sanchez just did in August, it's pretty safe to say. So, I mean, especially in a one-catcher league, if those first two or three catchers are gone, you know, and maybe even Brian McCann's left, all those catchers are solid. Why not take the upside of Sanchez? Because I feel like maybe his downside is McCann, Vogt, Wieters, Martin. That's his just if he has an okay 2017. But then there's the upside of him maybe even being the number one catcher.
I think that makes some sense. AJ Pollock is back. He hit .425 on his minor league rehab. Hit three home runs in 12 games. He has yet to hit for any power since coming back. Five games, no extra base hits. He has stolen four bases, and he's getting base hits. Diamondbacks are saying they're going to be pretty cautious with him, though I sort of wonder what that looks like. I feel like you kind of need to get this guy the at-bats, get him a good feeling going into the offseason. I'm still a little uncertain what to make of him. I'm really encouraged about the steals. I guess I won't be shocked if the power doesn't come back entirely until next year, but what do you expect to see from him down the stretch here?
Yeah, I expect him to be one of the leading base stealers in baseball in September. I mean, he's fresh. We talked about that a little bit last week that, I mean, he's got the negative that he hasn't played all season, so maybe he's a little rusty, but he's got the positive that he has the freshest legs in baseball basically right now because everybody else has been grinding away for months. So, you know, I expect plenty of steals. They did kind of say maybe they play him start him a couple games a series for now, but if he's hitting well, I could see that in a week or two turning into him playing about five games a week. So, you know, I think he should be in the active lineup in every league. And, you know, as you said, on the downside, you get one home run in September, and maybe on the plus side, you get three or four. But that's not really why you wanted him in the first place. It was the batting average, runs, and steals. I think he can do all of that.
Jed Jerko, 24 home runs because the Cardinals know more than any of the rest of us do. How far down the list is he a must add? What kind of leagues is he a guy where everybody needs to be starting him?
Yeah, I feel like in a lot of 10-team leagues, most of them, I feel like he should be owned, especially in, I kind of alluded to this with Moncada, with steals. You know, when we hit September, teams have specific needs. In most leagues, some teams are going to be in a roto league, in a tight home runs bunch. And if you're in a tight home runs bunch, he's a player that can really help you, especially because he's eligible at three or four positions, and depending on the service that you're using. And that makes it easy to get him in your lineup. And if you're in a home runs bunch in the standings, he's someone that can push you out of that by replacing your shortstop or second baseman or middle infielder, or maybe you have a light-hitting third baseman. You know, he can go in anywhere and help you. So for that reason, I feel like he should be in the lineup. I think he will play fairly regularly in September.
Yasiel Puig is apparently going to stay with the Dodgers. It's not entirely clear whether he is going to stay with Oklahoma City or with the Dodgers in September. I got to think he's been dropped entirely in some places. Based on how he's performed and based on the Dodgers saying nice things about him, are you stashing Puig maybe to get ahead of it and see if you can get something from him in September, or you kind of make him prove it before you do anything with him?
Yeah, I think I'm interested, and it's as much, you know, he's hit well in, you know, since they sent him down, but it's that Josh Reddick hasn't been hitting well, and this would be a bit of an about-face for the Dodgers after they basically added Reddick and sent Puig down at the same time. But, I mean, they have to – they're in a postseason race, and they have to accept what's been going on recently, and that's that maybe Puig can give their lineup, you know, more length in September. I'll throw this back to you, Matthew. If I set the number – let's say the Dodgers have – I don't know, they don't have it in front of me right now. Let's say they have something like 26 games left. You know, how many of those games do you think Puig gets in the starting lineup the rest of the year? Are we talking like 13 or 10, or are we talking maybe 20?
I'm probably setting an over-under around 10. I'm just kind of – I don't – even though they're saying nice things about him, I think they were probably saying nice things about him in part in hopes of finding a trade partner. So I just – it's hard for me to think that they went through all they went through with him as far as sending him down, as far as just the clear level of frustration there has been there, and that even in a race – I just, there's kind of a disconnect for me between all of that and, yep, we're going to play you two out of three games. So I'd love to see it. He's obviously fun to watch, and I hope it works out, and I hope he goes on to have a really good career. But any number higher than about 10 starts, I'm taking the under on that.
Yeah, so I mean, really, he's if you stash him, it's because you have bench space, and he's a bit of a lottery ticket where, you know, if they do a complete about-face and call him up in the next, like this weekend, and start using him, that, you know, I would assume I would rather pick up Moncada. You would probably very much rather pick up Moncada, right?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, and you'd rather pick up, if you're in a shallow league, someone like Jed Jerko, who's in the majors and playing well right now. So Puig's probably more like a 15-team league kind of guy that you stash, and maybe you get a week or two out of him at the end of the season if he gets back up in the first half of September and hits well.
Yeah, that would be the way I would see it.
But I do agree with you that there could be a PR campaign going on in Los Angeles right now with Puig as far as looking to November and figuring out the most advantageous position that organization can be in with him as far as like public relations go and trading him.
Right. I mean, look, this is not a stupid organization, so they know that no good comes to them sort of publicly and when it comes to trade options if they are running this guy down. We move to, it is September 1st, and we are starting to get the announcements of the first round of call-ups. I think one thing people should remember that I think serious fantasy players probably don't forget this, but I think some of your more casual players, some of your more casual fans might not remember this, which is just because a guy is not called up today doesn't mean he's not going to get called up. You've got teams in minor league playoff races. Sometimes these guys will even go and play in the minor league playoffs, so don't think that's because somebody's not here by the end of tonight that he's not going to get called up. With that said, who is on your radar beyond Moncada as the most compelling call-ups, guys who might have an impact in fantasy leagues?
Yeah, for me, it's probably Hunter Renfroe, just because we've been waiting now for a few weeks. And when I was looking at depth charts the other day, I noticed like the San Diego outfield is really thin. There's not a lot there after they traded, Upton and Kemp. So I feel like Renfroe gets called up at some point. Like, I haven't looked at the AAA standings to see, you know, where his team is and when exactly he'll arrive. But I feel like he arrives, and when he does, I feel like he will play every day. Do you agree with that sentiment?
I think that makes sense. I'm Renfroe is a guy that I like as a college player. I saw him in Omaha. I'm still not entirely sure what he is going to be in the major leagues. I'm still, the kind of shape of his stats worries me a little bit. A guy who really has no strike zone, even in the PCL. I sort of worry about that. Translation from the PCL to Petco Park, but I think he's going to get the opportunity. So I feel like he's one of those guys that, you know, sure, in an NL-only league, you have to pick him up if he's playing, but I'm not sure what there is beyond that. In other words, I think he will get the opportunity. I'm not entirely sure how much we are going to like what we see when he gets the opportunity.
If you could pick up Renfroe or Moncada, which one would you pick up?
Again, I even given what I just said about the opportunity for Moncada, I would take him. I think that Renfroe's floor as a major leaguer in 2016, and especially as a fantasy player, is pretty low. I mean, he could certainly run into some home runs. He could certainly hit 300. That's not a great lineup. It's probably a better lineup than people think. It's not a great lineup. It's a terrible place to hit. And it wouldn't be surprising if he came up and hit 220 with one or two home runs. Moncada's floor, I think, at the bare minimum, includes helping you with some steals. So I think that's probably the biggest difference between those two guys. This is not the biggest fantasy impact time. I mean, these are guys that we'll be getting a look at down the stretch and getting a look at for next year. I think the other really intriguing guy would have to be Byron Buxton. He's been up and down and up and down and up and down. Do you like Buxton this time around?
I think I've been burned too many times. And it's not even that I've personally owned him and been burned. It's just getting our hopes up and down. I would rather pick up Moncada.
Yeah.
And maybe this is just the human nature of not having been burned by him yet. But I think I would want to see some two-hit games out of Buxton. Forget the speed. I know that's there. I want to see some two-hit games from him before I pick him up, especially because he'll probably be at the bottom of the lineup.
Yep. The last time Buxton, his last stretch at AAA this year, his last 20 games since he was sent down the last time, 5 home runs, that's nice. 3 steals, that's nice. 32 strikeouts and 3 walks and 80 plate appearances. That's not nice. That's worrisome. And
maybe a sign that he just hasn't changed. If he's doing okay down there, from a batting average perspective at times, or a stolen bases perspective, or hitting a few home runs, that he still has the same flaws that caused him to be on the shuttle already.
It certainly looks that way, which is disappointing. But David Price, first quietly and then a little more loudly lately, has turned back into David Price. 2.44 ERA and 48 innings over his last 7 starts. He has 10 strikeout games since the All-Star break. Since late June. Anyway, he is coming around. He is coming together. I think it's easy to look at a guy with his ability and to look at his situation and kind of wave away the first 2 or 3 months and say, look, sometimes this just happens. Sometimes in a new market, on a big contract, sometimes guys are going to have a rough go at first and kind of wave it away and say, this is what David Price is. He is back to being the guy that we expected him to be. Are you buying that, or are you not quite there?
I'd say I'm pretty much there. I expect him to do quite well in September. I expect him to kind of keep going what he's been doing. At the same time, I will say, just him being in the AL East and there being a lot of divisional games in September, I haven't totally laid out who he's about to face. I know he faces the A's this weekend, and I think he might get a start in against the Padres before they start their divisional run. But if the Red Sox line him up to face the Blue Jays often or the Orioles often, those are tough matchups for him. I feel like he's an ace down the stretch with just a little bit more blow-up potential than the Sales and Scherzers, the Bumgarners. I feel like I would be less surprised if I saw a 4-inning, 7-run start from Price, but I'm not expecting it at this point. I do feel pretty confident in him.
Quickly eyeballing it, it looks like we're looking at something along the lines of at Oakland, at San Diego, home Baltimore, home Yankees, at Baltimore probably, though that could be at Tampa Bay, and then at Yankees, and possibly, depending on how it ends up, home the last weekend of the season against the Blue Jays. There's some friendly matchups and some not very friendly matchups in there. But, I think the thing to remember is that on balance, from here to the end, now look, if we're 2 weeks from now, it's another matter, but from here to the end, on balance, you look at the entirety of that, that's not that bad for a guy pitching in the AL East.
No, I think it's pretty good. And there's some aggressive swingers in the Orioles lineup. It's a chance for him to have a bad start, but it's also a chance for him to strike out 10 batters. So I don't view that as really a bad matchup. The Yankees matchups don't scare me. As you said, he may not face Toronto all the rest of the season, or he may face them kind of on the last day. By then, a lot of fantasy leagues will be decided. He's got a couple really favorable starts coming up. I wouldn't be surprised to see an ERA at pretty much 3 even or something the rest of the way.
Yep. Julio Urias has really started being the pitcher that people thought he could be. He's been very, very good lately. It's still not entirely clear what his role is going to look like down the stretch, though even as we were just saying the Dodgers are a smart organization, the Dodgers are also an organization that knows that there's a big difference between making the postseason and not making the postseason, and I still will believe they're removing him when they do. How much do you like the combination of performance and uncertainty for Arias over the final month?
Yeah, I think that he should be owned in most daily transaction leagues because, you know, we never find out about his start 45 minutes before it happens. We always know a day or two ahead. So in a daily transaction league, he could be really valuable in September. In a weekly transaction league, he may be frustrating, but that being said, I don't see him really going whole weeks without pitching. So I feel like in a lot of weekly transaction leagues, I with them in that postseason race, I would feel pretty comfortable putting him in my lineup and just assuming that he's going to pitch at some time during that week-long period, and I'm not scared to use him, you know, unless you see, like, a trip to Coors or something on there. Other than that, you know, I'm not really scared to use him against any team.
Yep. While we are on the subject of the top prospects in the game who happen to be starting pitchers, Alex Reyes going to get some opportunity. I was kind of hoping that Reyes would remain in the bullpen. He was pretty spectacular there, as makes sense. 13 strikeouts in 9 1/3 innings. His first start, 4 strikeouts, 4 walks, and that's really kind of the worry with Reyes. Even in the minors, he walked too many guys. I don't know that he'll be all that efficient. I like the upside a lot, but I'd like him more as a reliever. Are you picking up Reyes, or are you worried about the blow-up potential with the strike zone issues?
Yeah, I'm worried enough that I'm definitely not adding him, you know, in a 10-team league. I mean, it is all category-dependent right now. I could see Reyes having a solid ERA and a high whip. We see that often with rookie starters who lack great control, where they can strike out enough batters to keep their ERA in the threes, but the whip goes into the 1.3, 1.4 range. You know, so if I'm in a rotisserie league and I don't care about my whip that much based on my standings, then maybe I pick him up and hope he gets strikeouts. But, I mean, he may not work deep into games with his control issues, so that limits the win potential. So, you know, 15-team league, I'd use him. The control issues are enough to keep me away from him unless I'm not really concerned about my whip.
You stay with the Cardinals and their organization. A very different minor league profile. Luke Weaver was a guy who threw a lot of strikes in the minors and missed bats. I mean, this is a guy whose minor league performance record is outstanding. I am kind of intrigued by him. I don't know how much upside there is, but I also know that, again, we talk sometimes about organizations. I have a certain level of trust in the Cardinals with this kind of pitcher, the guy that wasn't necessarily perceived as a high upside college starter, the guy who's drafted and perceived as that kind of high floor, low ceiling college starter. Cardinals have some history of those guys having higher ceilings than we think. I don't necessarily mean to compare him to Waka or Lynn, but, you know, these guys that you sort of say, well, yeah, he's a four. Cardinals have a history of turning them into twos and threes. So how much do you like Weaver?
Yeah, I like him enough that I would own him in a 12-team league and consider him in a 10. And if you look at his game log since he came up, you know, not great in his first start. Okay, he's at Chicago. That's not a great way this season to make your major league debut. His next start wasn't great either at Philadelphia. But then, you know, a good start at home against the A's, and then 10 strikeouts in 6 innings in his last start against the Brewers. So he's kind of trending in the right direction. As you said, his minor league numbers are good. You know, he can strike batters out. And to me, he's almost the opposite of Reyes, where, you know, Weaver, his calling card seems to be that he could be a consistent source of maybe, you know, 6 innings, 2 or 3 runs, 6 or 7 strikeouts. And I like that down the stretch.
Yeah, I'm with you. I like him. I really hope that I said how much I liked Ivan Nova to the Pirates when we talked. I don't remember if I said it or not. I hope I'm on record as having liked it, because I did like it. I liked that idea, even as you know, not everything worked for the Pirates this year. The idea of that kind of extreme ground ball guy in front of that team whose whole MO is turning ground balls, getting ground balls and turning them into outs, that looked promising. That looked intriguing the day it happened, and so far it has been really nice. He's not striking out a lot of guys. That's, I guess, fine. It's certainly fine for the Pirates. How much does it deter you from him when looking at Nova as a fantasy guy, and when you compare him to somebody like Brandon Finnegan, for example? Which of those guys do you like more?
I think I'm buying Nova a little more, just because there's been a definite change that we can pinpoint, right? Like, he left New York, he went to Pittsburgh, he went from the DH League to the National League, he's got a new pitching coach, You know, he's got a pitcher-friendly home park now. So, and with what happened with Jay Happ, you know, late last season, and I hate to fall into that trap of just kind of comparing one guy with a completely different guy, because we can't, that's sometimes dangerous. But we do have a precedent there for the Pirates taking someone late in the season, helping them, you know, reduce their walk rate and have a lot of success. Whereas Finnegan's throwing the ball really well right now, but I can't totally say that that's not just a really nice stretch for him, and that he couldn't go back to four innings, five runs, like in his next start. And that could happen to Nova too, but I don't know. I feel like I would rather take the shot with Nova. Is that where you're leaning as well?
Yeah, and you know, the club is part of it, and it's, you know, we talked about this sort of Pirates factor, but also I just have more faith in general in somebody pitching on the Pirates than somebody pitching on the Reds. I mean, but you talk about the ballpark, you talk about the defense, just everything about it. I have more faith in a Pirate than a Red for a pitcher, and it's not particularly close. So if the pitchers are close, that difference is pretty significant to me.
Yeah, I mean, the bullpens, I mean, the Reds, I think, are the second-highest bullpen ERA, although they have worked it down a bit this season.
Yeah.
There's just a lot of things in Nova's favor right now. I'm intrigued by him. I would want to own him in pretty much any format and see how these next couple starts go, because I feel like we cannot ignore what Jay Happ did late last season. I mean, and we can't say that he's just going to do that. But, you know, Happ showed it's possible.
Mm-hmm. Last week, I believe it was Thursday night. Yeah, it was Thursday night. I was sitting in the bar at Delmonico in Venetian in Las Vegas, sipping on some lovely whiskey on my vacation and watching Matt Moore try to close out a no-hitter. He didn't quite get it, but I know we were both really high on Moore going to San Francisco. It seemed like an indicator that maybe this is going to come together. My only worry, and my worry as I watched it, was, boy, that was a lot to ask of a guy who has a lengthy medical history and who still, I think it's fair to say, doesn't have surgery completely out of the back of the rearview mirror. So I sort of took mixed things from that game. On the one hand, yeah, this is what this guy can do. On the other, I'm a little worried in the near term after that about the effects of that. How much does one game affect the way you look at Matt Moore?
Yeah, I'm going to say it doesn't change it that much. It maybe restores it, because Moore hadn't gotten off to a great start with the Giants. Like, we were both really high on him right when the trade happened. That he was pretty inconsistent those first couple starts with the Giants. Then we saw, you know, the best of Matt Moore in that start. So it kind of brought me back to where I was with him on August 1st. And I know your concern, and I understand it totally, on the workload in that game. And it could have an impact on him. We'll see late in the season. But, I mean, overall, I think I felt more optimistic, I guess I should, you know, the next day than I did the day before on him, because I was starting to kind of trend back away from him. And I'm not as high typically on Moore as you are. And I was starting to lose some of that faith I had on August 1st and say, okay, maybe same old Matt Moore, you know, just in a new uniform. And now I'm a little rejuvenated that he could have a nice finish here with the Giants.
Shelby Miller has been through a lot this year. It has not been a good year for him. He came back from the minors and pitched pretty well against a good team in a friendly ballpark in San Francisco, but 6 innings, 6 hits, 2 runs, 1 walk, which is really nice to see. 3 strikeouts, a little less nice to see, but no home runs. There was quite a bit to like. I am not suggesting that everybody run out and pick up Shelby Miller. With that said, if I had a bench space and I had a glaring need in pitching, he'd be a guy I would very seriously consider stashing, waiting to see if he does it for 1 or 2 more starts. And I think there's really high reward potential there. And I think that we're going to know pretty quickly how high the risk is. I think, you know, I'm not buying right now, but I'm a couple starts away from being really, really intrigued. And I might be getting in on it now to make sure that I didn't feel stupid for not picking him up. What do you think about Miller?
Yeah, I'm gonna be a little more pessimistic on him. I'm not at a Byron Buxton level of, like, I'll believe it when I see it with him, but a little bit, just because we've been burned with him a couple times now this year. And because his strikeout rate, I'm not sure if it's going to be really high down the stretch, which means he needs to pitch well. And my stance on him is maybe different, but has some similarities to when we were just talking about Brandon Finnegan, where the Diamondbacks have the highest bullpen ERA in baseball. Their defensive efficiency ratio is very poor. So they have a lineup that can score, but as far as helping him keep runs off the board or securing wins for him, they're not really going to be great assets in that regard. So for those reasons, and then, I mean, even in his own division, like, the Giants are a pretty scrappy team that are trying to make the postseason. The Dodgers are a good team, and the Rockies are a dangerous lineup. So he could have a lot of tough, and his park's not helpful. There's enough negatives there that I'm probably not going to be the guy who owns him. Someone else will probably jump on board first. But I can't rule out, after what he did for a big chunk of last year, you know, I can't rule out the possibility that he could be decent in September. I guess maybe my feeling is more that he'll be decent than special, whereas mm-hmm. for someone like Nova, I have this glimmer right. of hope that maybe he could be special in September.
I think that's fair. Matt Shoemaker had, over the past month or so, was still posting pretty good ratios, was still pitching deep into games, but his strikeout rate really has fallen off, and that was what really jumped out about him during his hot streak was 12 strikeouts, 11, 8, 6, 11, 7, 7, 6. That's way down recently. He struck out 7 earlier this week, but it was against the Reds, and I'm not sure how much of an adjustment factor there needs to be. I'm not all the way off Shoemaker. I still have him in the Office League, which is the one I'm paying the most attention to right now, and I'm still starting him for the most part, but I've cooled on him a little bit. What do you expect to see from Shoemaker from here on out?
Yeah, the loss of strikeouts, you know, definitely takes away the excitement. I think he could be, but he is, as you mentioned, he is racking up, you know, a lot of seven-inning starts, you know, with two or three runs. He's almost changed from, you know, he had that stretch earlier where, like, he's put up these monster strikeout totals, so we were really excited about him, and now I'm not excited, but I do feel like he's the kind of guy who still deserves a spot at the back end of a mixed league rotation, mm-hmm. because it seems like we can, for the most part, count on him for 6 or 7 innings and 2 or 3 runs. If I look back at those last few starts, you know, in his past, what is it, 5 starts, you know, 0 runs in 1, 2 or 3 in the others, and 5 in 1. And that 5 was at Cleveland, who's, you know, really on a roll this late this season. And so overall, you know, I feel like he's someone who should be in your lineup, but he's not going to win your league. He's not going to lose it for you either.
That's fair. Daniel Hudson, I guess, is the guy. We moved to closers now, and I guess Daniel Hudson is the guy. He's having a rough year. He's been a little better overall lately. He got another chance after a blown save this week, which I think is encouraging. Anybody you really want to own in that Arizona bullpen?
No, I just don't think it's worth it. Like, you'd have to be so desperate for saves, I think, to pick up Hudson. It's the combination of, you know, the blow-up potential plus the potential for a lack of save chances. In a six-game week, how many games is Arizona going to win with the rotation they have right now and, you know, in their bullpen? And then how many close games are they going to be able to win? I think your expectation is one save, and you're maybe I don't think you can even really expect 2 saves, and for me, it's not worth it for 1 save.
Likewise, is there anybody you like in Anaheim with Fernando Salas gone and the dial move to yet another name?
I think I'm out on that one too. I was kind of getting in on Salas a little bit in the sense of, you know, he has in his career had some effective stretches, and to me, I don't know, the Angels, like, they maybe have a little more win potential or close game win potential. I don't know if they do or not, or if that's just my perception, but I was getting a little bit into Salas, at least maybe as a 15-team league guy, or like if you're totally desperate for saves guy. But, you know, with him gone, I don't even know if they'll settle on someone, or if they'll even have a bulk of save chances for someone to be settled on.
Yep. I think the most interesting ninth inning situation right now is in Miami, where Fernando Rodney was pretty good while AJ Ramos was out, and it sounds like he is probably the primary guy from here on out. They have a few interesting names. They still have Barraclough, who almost certainly has the best stuff of anybody back there, and apparently is not going to get a chance. Who would you rather have, Rodney or Ramos, from here on out?
Yeah, there's so much left, or so little left for the here on out, that I guess it's Rodney. Even if I think Ramos is a better pitcher, I mean, there's no real reason to believe that Rodney stops converting saves in the next couple of weeks. And if he doesn't give them any reason to go away from him, then they stick with him. And I mean, for him to be more valuable than Ramos, all we need, I think there are 5 weeks left in the season after this one. All we need, no, I think there's four left after this one. I mean, all we need is him to keep that job for more than 2 weeks, and he'll have it for more time than Ramos can have it.
We move to injuries, and I'm sort of the resident Rays apologist. I like Alex Cobb a lot, and I am probably not picking him up this year until I get really convinced. Do you like him more than I do?
No, I'm the same on you. I think you and I will probably have, like, an Alex Cobb, you know, love fest at some point next March when we're getting ready for drafts and trying to remind people that he could be a really good starter next year. But for this year, you know, probably low pitch totals in his starts, lots of divisional matchups. And the divisional matchups are the ones that will hurt the Rays the most, because at least the pitchers on Toronto and Boston and Baltimore don't have to face their own lineup, where as he will pretty much every time out. Next year for sure. This year I'd have to be pretty desperate.
Chris Tillman is apparently on the way back. The Orioles continue to make pretty, more or less, happy sounds about him. Do you start him without hesitation when he returns, or do you kind of wary a little bit?
Yeah, I'm definitely wary. We've seen some really bad Chris Tillman over the years. We've seen some good Chris Tillman and some bad Chris Tillman, and depending on what his first matchups look like when he's coming back, unless I am secure with my ratios, I'm not willing to risk it. I would be fine with dropping Tillman in a mixed league. Like, if there was someone on waivers I really liked, or if it was really, you know, key in my season, like head-to-head leagues that are in playoffs now, or just I needed to pile up innings and I saw some two-start pitchers out there I really wanted, I'm not that confident that Tillman's going to be, like, special or anything in September.
What do you think about Gerrit Cole, who has actually been placed on the DL? It's a little nervous when a guy gets put on the DL this late in the year. It sort of is an indicator. I mean, it might just be an indicator they needed the body. But when guys get put on the DL this late, it kind of sets off a little bit of an alarm bell for me. How worried are you about Cole?
Yeah, I'm worried enough that I would drop him. And he hasn't pitched well in the second half. So, I mean, if you compare him to someone, like, let's say he has a short DL stint, at least Tillman pitched well for a good chunk of the year. You look at someone like Steven Strasburg, who should be back next week, who pitched great for a good chunk of the year. You know, Cole hasn't pitched well in the second half. Now he's on the DL. We don't know if he's going to miss 2 weeks or 3 weeks. I mean, I just don't see it being worth, like, if someone has DL spots and you don't have anyone else for them, sure, go ahead and stick him in one. But I wouldn't put him in a bench spot. I think I would go ahead and pick up a Von Nova or someone who's healthy and can help you and is pitching well right now. You can't wait, I think, for what could be zero starts, and even in an optimistic might only be three.
Yeah. We move to the two-start pitchers, and I think there's one that jumps out to me. We've got Bartolo at Cincinnati and at Atlanta, Graveman home for the Angels and Mariners, Daniel Norris at the White Sox, home for the Orioles, Matt Moore at Colorado and at Phoenix, Colin McHugh at Cleveland, home for the Cubs, and Volquez at Minnesota and at the White Sox. I think the guy that jumps out to me is Bartolo, because he has been so solid, and even in Cincinnati, that's a tough park, I still don't mind it, and I really like that at Atlanta. Volquez, Norris probably next, but here's the thing. Moore, again, look, we just talked about how much I like Moore. I'm probably still starting him. I'm not picking him up. If I don't already have Moore, I'm not picking him up for those two games. If he's on waivers and I didn't already pick him up, I'm not picking him up for those two games. But if I have him, I'm bought in enough that I'm starting him. So I kind of view him almost in a little bit of a separate category from the rest of these guys. But how do you like them? Is there somebody I didn't like that you're higher on than I am?
I agree with you. I think that Bartolo is probably, for me, the safest one. I actually think Kendall Graveman's pretty safe. Like, both of his starts are at home. The Angels lineup, to me, is not really scary. It's one of those top-heavy lineups where if he can get through Trout and Pujols, fine, then the bottom half of the lineup doesn't really scare me. And then, you know, the Mariners lineup's pretty good, but again, he'll be working at home there. I don't mind Norris. I don't think I would start Moore. That's really scary. Like, the at Coors is about as scary as it gets. And then I've always, this season, I worry about lefties against the Diamondbacks, because Goldschmidt is great against lefties. Pollock now is back as good against lefties. Wellington Castillo is better against lefties. Tomas is better against lefties. It's just, for me, putting a lefty into that park against them is worrisome. You know, for me, Cologne, Graveman, and then I think Norris is probably the third for me. Norris is a guy who doesn't seem to help your whip, but he usually keeps his ERA in the high threes or in the threes somewhere. I don't love the home to Baltimore I don't love either of his matchups, home to Baltimore at the White Sox, but I don't totally hate them either.
Right, that's fair. And the thing I would emphasize again on Moore is if I didn't already have him, I'm sure not picking him up for this week. I mean, I think that, you know, if he's on waivers in your league and you weren't buying in before, then you're not buying in for those matchups. But I am high enough on him and the team that I think if I'm already on board, I'm staying on board. But.
Yeah, and these decisions in September are really standings dependent. Like, if you need to make a move in strikeouts then and you feel good about ratios, you start Moore and you hope he gets you 14 strikeouts or something or 12 strikeouts next week. And then in that regard, at that point, he's probably a better option than Graveman, who doesn't tend to strike out a lot of batters. You know, if your ratios are tight, maybe you start Graveman because he has the better chance of having the 6 or 7 inning 3-run
right.
start. So, and it's really standings dependent right now.
Yep. And that is a good thing to remember in all of these decisions. We got a little less away from the strategy talk and just player talk this week, and that's perfectly good. We will probably have more strategy talk next week, but that's Fantasy 411. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and thanks, Fred Zinke, for taking some time to talk.